Welcome back.
Hey guys, welcome back.
How's everybody doing?
Hope you've had a fantastical day.
Yes, this is Beth.
And this is Diz.
And this is
Trigger Warning.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. We have a little bit of business. Because we have enough stuff to have business.
We got first business, now. Guys.
So we have a Facebook page now. I've been putting it in the notes of the previous episodes, but this is the first time I actually am going to talk about it. So the Facebook page is called TW, for trigger warning, TW Podcast, hosted by Bev and Diz.
That's us.
We also have Instagram, which is Trigger Warning 411. So look us up. We're going to try to do what we can with it, but we both work and have other lives. And then our email, in case you've forgotten, is triggerwarning411@gmail.com. So hit us up and email us and rate and review us and say good things about us
and tell share all your us friends. With everyone you know.
Tell all your friends.
And your enemies. We don't mind.
And your enemies. And so I'm going to get into this episode because it's cool.
I'm excited. And it kind of
ties
this.
In with the one that came out on Wednesday, was about the mass murder in Alaska that Diz covered. So this is the continuing haunted places in each state series that I've decided to do. So Alaska was the next one, and we did not plan that.
No, we were just that
but it worked
good.
Out perfectly.
We're just so in sync.
We're just in sync. Yeah.
Yeah.
So trigger warnings for this episode: child death, ghosts, shipwrecks. Okay, there we go.
All right, cool. Okay.
This is not all spoopy stuff. Cool.
Spoopy.
So a little history about Alaska first. Alaska was officially transferred to the U.S. from Russia on October 18th, 1867, after the U.S. purchased it for $7.2 million in March of that year.
Crazy.
In 2023, that $7.2 million would have been equal to about $129
million. Wow.
We bought a big old plot of land.
Yeah, we did. Snowy land.
So, because of the distance and the vast frickin' wilderness that is Alaska, people didn't really start to settle there until the 1890s.
Uh-huh.
And that is because of the gold rush.
Yes.
Or series of gold rushes, because they would suddenly be like, oh, somebody found gold in XYZ, and then everybody would be like, I'm going to go to XYZ, and I'm going to find gold.
And towns would be so, like, they're hopping over there in XYZ.
Exactly. So the lure of the gold was too much for some to resist, so miners and their families headed to Alaska to seek their fortune, and most of them didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, Alaska was deemed a U.S. territory in 1912, and then it was granted statehood as the 49th state on January 3rd, 1959.
That wasn't that long ago.
No, it really wasn't.
That is
and
so crazy.
It was in January 3rd, 1959, and I think Hawaii was like 4 to 6 months later. Like, same year. I don't know.
That crazy. Is crazy.
Yeah. So they had it from 1867 on and didn't. It was almost 100 years. It was like 8 years
just
shy of having had it for 100 years before they
made it an actual state.
Yeah. So,
dang.
49th state, January 3rd, 1959.
Cool.
So Alaska is rugged and wild and beautiful, but it's also not easily accessible by vehicle. This means that the people who live there, especially in the more rural areas, have to get by. They have to be self-sufficient.
Yeah.
So our first story is centered around one of those families. The first stop on the haunted tour of Alaska is Bedarka Road.
That's a great name.
Which runs through the Chugach National Forest.
This is going to be fun.
So Bedarka, I didn't look up the pronunciation, so if you're in Alaska and I misspelled your road, I do apologize. Or mispronounced your road, I apologize. But I did look up the Chugach, and it surprised me that's how it was pronounced. But Chugach, that's what it said. So local lore says that a man and his 5-year-old daughter were in the woods one winter, and the man was working to cut and gather firewood. When he paused to take a break, he lodged the axe in the tree so his daughter wouldn't trip over it or fall on it. But his daughter wanted to impress her father and be helpful, like most little kids want to do.
Right.
And when he wasn't watching, she reached up and started pulling on the axe.
Oh, dear.
She was going to chop some wood, too, and like and help him and show him how, you know, strong and good of a kid she was.
That's adorable.
So after she tugged on it for a minute, she managed to dislodge it. But when it came free, it fell on her, and it hit her in the head, killing her instantly.
Oh, my gosh.
So her father fell to his knees, held his daughter. There was nothing he could do to save her. She was already gone.
Mm-hmm.
So legend says that he stayed there, refusing to leave his daughter alone in the cold woods, holding his little girl until he, too, passed away from the cold. Hypothermia.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So it's said that if you drive down Bedarka Road around 3 o'clock in the morning, the witching hour, you can see the man cradling his bloodied daughter on the side of the road.
Oh my gosh.
That gives me chills.
It does.
Even knowing, like, I wrote that on this thing and it gave me chills.
Yes.
Depending on the source, the man had another daughter and his wife waiting at home. Or another source said that his son was with him. And then in one source, I saw that the tree itself fell on the daughter, not the axe. But the main part of it, basically, that led to the haunting was the tragic accident, the little girl being killed, and then her dad being so heartbroken that he wouldn't leave her, and he died of hypothermia.
Wow.
I also read that you can't find Bedarka Road on a map, but there's an unnamed gravel road leading into the woods outside the town of South Birchwood that's believed to be the area that's haunted. So, if you're in Alaska, or you're going to Alaska, I will let you drive there in the middle of the night, and you let me know.
Yeah. Take pictures,
you tell
scenes.
Me if you see that scene, because I don't want to. So, if you're bebopping around Alaska, find yourself heading down to the Parks Highway. Pay attention as you approach the 188th mile marker.
Ooh.
This is a different story. This is a different road. So on the Parks Highway, around the 188th mile marker, on the eastern side of the highway is a very large, very abandoned igloo.
An igloo?
Yeah, y'all should have seen Diz's face.
That's fantastic.
Like, at first she was like, what?
An igloo?
So, construction began on the large white dome-shaped structure in the 1970s. The creator, Leon Smith, decided that the remote area where he owned a gas station would be a perfect place for a unique hotel. The highway stretches between Anchorage and Fairbanks, and Leon's gas station was roughly the halfway point.
That's pretty good.
And the road was busy. It was, you know, hikers, vacationers, mountaineers, whatever. But there was very little in the way of lodging nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically like you start driving. If you've run out of daylight or whatever, there's really nowhere for you to stop to stay.
You just stay in your car.
I think there was like an RV park right there or mm-hmm. something like that. But there just wasn't a lot around. So, Leon decided that he was going to build an igloo-shaped hotel.
Fantastic.
So it would be like a place of refuge in that halfway point on that long expanse of highway for the travelers. And when asked why he would build an igloo-shaped hotel in Alaska, he answered, "Well, you wouldn't expect an igloo in Egypt, would you?"
I guess that's sound.
Leon's funny.
Yes, I like that. Leon.
I mean, I actually was kind of like, that's kind of funny. Like,
well, I mean, you expect to see that.
He purposely misunderstood the question. It was funny. Anyway, so he cleared the land next to his gas station and started shipping in plywood and polyurethane foam and started construction. His plan was to have 58 guest rooms, a restaurant, a gift shop, and a spa.
That's going to be huge.
Yeah. He was also planning to use the top floor as a home for his family. So once everything was done, the grand opening would be held in the summer of 1973. But the grand opening would never come about. After putting about $100,000 into the project, Leon couldn't get a loan for the additional $90,000 he needed.
Wow.
In addition, the building was not up to code because the windows that cover the whole structure are too small. They don't meet code. Because they have to, I guess they have to be big enough for people to get through.
Right.
And they were small windows.
Exit. Okay.
And side note, and this wasn't in any of the articles I've read, but personally, I have some misgivings about a hotel covered in polyurethane foam.
Yeah, that's scary.
Which is flammable.
That was really scary when I was like, no.
Yeah, it can be treated to be fire resistant, but I'm just saying.
Well, back in the 70s, would it have been?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
I don't know. Anyway. So, Leon slowly continued construction until the 90s, 1990s.
Wow.
Before he finally sold the hotel, hoping someone else would follow through on it. And attempts were made over the years, but never came to fruition. According to an article from June of 2023, the hotel was being cleaned up and remodeled to become a distillery.
Oh, that's cool.
But I wasn't able to find anything more recent about the plans for the building.
Wow.
So, until June of 2023, though, the Igloo Hotel was basically just an abandoned four-story structure that can be seen by jetliners flying at 30,000 feet. That's how big this thing
that
is.
That thing is massive. Yeah. I'm going to have to
you
Google it so I can see it.
From an airplane if you're at 30,000 feet.
Gosh, because things are like little dots by then.
Yeah. Yeah.
It ain't no little dot.
And they can see that thing.
Wow.
So, over the years, tourists and, quote, urban explorers have sought it out simply because it's odd. Just kind of randomly in the middle of the wilderness.
Yeah.
It's not advised to enter, but of course people have. It's been vandalized. It's covered with graffiti. It's falling apart in places.
That's why we can't have anything nice. Come
yeah,
on, people.
I know, right? One article mentioned it's also dangerous to explore due to the wildlife in the area. It's a fairly remote place. There are bears and wolves, and they're in the wilderness surrounding the structure. So, you know, yeah. And then, of course, when it snows, I mean, you can have 5 feet of snow right there. So,
right.
Yeah. So, despite no one ever having stayed there, because it was never a working hotel, there are still stories of unexplained things happening there.
Okay.
Witnesses have reported lights on and the numerous small windows.
Ooh,
as if the hotel were open for business. But upon turning around to check, like they drive by and there'd be lights on, they'd be like, that hotel's open, let's go back. There'd be no lights on at all when they turned back to look.
Mm.
And in fact, there's no electricity to the building.
Oh.
Yeah. At this point. I don't know after the 2023
could it have been
distillery
car lights?
Thing.
They're car lights? Mm.
So lights have also been seen just in individual windows. And there have been reports of a woman in white looking out from one of the windows on the top floor. And she would be visible due to the light coming from behind her. Light, of course, that has no source.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did his wife die there or anything
no.
like that we know of?
No. He just worked on constructing it, and I think he did most of the construction, so it's not like he had crew there or anything
right.
like that. And... But for some reason, maybe
that
just
would be
because
so creepy.
Because of the randomness, maybe it's spirits from the highway, from accidents on the highway.
That's true.
I don't know.
Or just from the land itself and its
yeah
the past or what the history
yeah.
of it.
But yeah, lights
creepy.
On and the woman in white. And there are women in white stories in a lot of different hauntings.
Like
and
everywhere.
Stuff, but nobody ever stayed there.
Yeah, that's what's interesting because like it's not like people got to stay and it was, you know, open for a few years.
Right, yeah.
Like, most hotels have that kind of history.
Right. Okay, so, speaking of abandoned and creepy places,
yes.
let's make our next stop, the
let's
ghost town of Kennicott, Alaska.
I'm ready, let's go.
So, I mentioned the gold rushes of the 1890s, and Kennicott was a town built on the mining industry.
Okay.
But it wasn't gold being mined at Kennicott, or at least not just gold. The main attraction in Kennicott was copper.
Oh.
So, Kennicott Copper Corporation, try to say that five
say
times
that.
Fast.
Yeah.
Used funding from J.P. Morgan to build the Copper River and Northwestern Railway.
Oh.
Which is a 200-mile railroad that ran from Kennicott Glacier south to Cordova, Alaska.
A glacier.
Yeah. The railroad cost $20 million to build, which is roughly $700 million today.
Have mercy.
Yeah. And of course, that varies depending on what source you go to, right, to do the exchange rate. But
it's
still
close enough.
Holy crap. Holy that's crap. A lot of money.
Yes, it is.
So built between 1907 and 1911, the railroad became essential in the transportation of the copper ore from the mines to, you know, civilization. The copper ore mined from the Wrangell Mountains, mm-hmm, was transported across a 3-mile aerial tramway, then traveled 4,000 feet down the mountainside via conveyors to the town of Kennecott.
Wow.
And then in Kennecott, it was shipped south via the CR and NW Railway, the Copper River Northwestern Railway, to smelters in Tacoma, Washington.
Dang.
Yeah. So it sounds kind of simple that way because that's the way I wrote it.
But not really.
But it was not simple.
Not at all.
The railroad crossed wide canyons. It that's hung bad. On the rock walls above the
Ill.
Copper River and traversed tunnels that had been built by blasting through miles and miles of rock.
Oh, gosh.
Added to that, the railway was built over the Kennecott Glacier, which meant that the tracks had to be moved sometimes as the ice of the glacier melted and shifted.
Oh, heck no.
That is crazy.
Heck
the railroad
no.
tracks had to be moved because of the glacier. Because glaciers are not just not stationary.
It's not like rock.
They move.
Yeah.
And, you know, they crack and they shift and whatever. Many workers died during the construction of the railway.
Yeah, I can imagine.
After the mining boom, the nearby towns, including Kennecott, turned into ghost towns nearly overnight.
Yeah.
McCarthy, which was a nearby town, managed to stay alive because of individual and small company mines. So the rushes weren't there, but they still had a few individuals and some small companies that were mining copper and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
In 1980, the National Park Service established the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. This included the wilderness around Kennecott, and the establishment of the park increased tourism to the area, leading people to visit Kennecott again. In the 1990s, Alaska began developing a government housing tract along the trail that had once been the railroad. During construction, however, workers told of visions of ghostly figures and disembodied voices of both children and adults.
It gives me the creeps.
They reported tombstones along the trail that would be there 1 minute and gone the next. And eventually they began to lose tools right out of their toolboxes and even off the tool belts they were wearing.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it was eventually it was difficult to keep the workers there and the construction project was canceled.
What the heck?
Yeah. So basically the ghosts were like, no, you ain't building that here.
Yeah.
They were like, no, nuh-uh. So,
wow.
Travelers along McCarthy Road to Kennecott, even today, speak of the tombstones on their way into town. When they leave, though, the tombstones are gone, as if they'd never been there to
begin
with.
What the heck?
Witnesses have also claimed to hear voices of long-dead railway workers and miners in the areas near the once-bustling railroad line.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
They see, like, I mean, tombstones on their own, just because of what they are creepy.
Are creepy, and yeah.
Yeah. And so people pass by, and they're like, oh, it's some random tombstone, and they come back, and there's nothing
like,
there.
It's like, look how old that one is.
Yeah. And there's nothing
there.
And there's
nothing there.
And then they hear voices of people. Kids, and that kids' voices.
Kids are creepy.
That's creepy.
Oh, that's so creepy.
That is really creepy. Yeah. But then the workers were, like, too afraid to work.
And
especially when their
stolen.
Tools would be pulled off their own tool belt and disappear. That's crazy.
That would be terrifying.
Yeah. And because, you know, they're out in the middle of kind of nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the nearest town is that little McCarthy town, and it's like nothing. So, yeah. So, now we're going to go to Sitka, Alaska.
I think I've heard of that.
To Castle Hill.
Ooh.
Which is no longer the site of a grand historic castle.
Oh dear.
But, originally, the land belonged to an indigenous tribe that built a fort there claiming final victory in a war between tribes.
Okay.
So they built their fort. They had won a war that was already between the indigenous tribes there.
Mm-hmm.
When Russians began coming to the lands, the fort was used defensively to protect the tribe. At some point, the tribe abandoned the area, or abandoned the fort, and the Russians took it over, and they established Baranof Castle, named for Alexander Baranof, the first Russian governor of Alaska. So when Alaska was signed over to the U.S., the event actually took place on Castle Hill.
That's cool.
Soon after the land exchanged hands, the Baranof family left, and they sailed away. And not too long after they left, the ghost stories began.
Interesting.
Sightings of a beautiful woman dressed in black occurred on the castle grounds. The woman is believed to be a Russian princess wearing black robes and lovely jewels. And she wandered throughout Baranof Castle, resigned to her fate. It's said that she killed herself on her wedding night, desperate to avoid the arranged marriage she'd been forced into, a man that she did not love. So, Baranof Castle wasn't used much over the next couple of decades after the family left and everything. On March 17th, 1894, the castle burned down. So, Castle Hill is named that because that's where the castle once stood.
Gotcha.
But there's none of the castle left.
Uh-huh.
But the lady in black can still be seen at Castle Hill, wandering the grounds, bemoaning her lost love and her broken dreams.
That's so sad.
A Russian princess.
Oh.
See, and if you look up information on this and you want to look up the logical stuff that makes it less, like, spooky, there was never a woman living there that it could have been.
Okay.
But.
But that doesn't matter.
Yeah. But it's a cool story.
It is.
So I was like, forget you, site that told me that.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting, too, that she was wearing black robes.
Instead of white.
Instead of white.
Especially for her wedding.
The lady in white thing, always. But I guess she did it because she killed herself.
She's
and was
mourning.
Thinking black because she was mourning.
Yeah, exactly.
Because apparently she was in love with a different man, but this marriage was arranged for her. And so she, instead of marrying this man, she killed herself.
Bless her. Bless yeah. her.
But really I can't imagine there. Going, because Castle Hill is a tourist spot.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it was a big deal because it was where we took possession of the state.
Land. Yeah.
And so, you know, people still go to it and everything. And I can't imagine going there as a tourist and just, like, bebopping around and then seeing a woman in black.
Yeah.
And, you know, black robes and probably from the 1800s. Yeah, creepy.
So creepy.
Yeah. So, tales of brokenhearted brides are common in ghost stories. Alaska is a big state, so that means they get two forlorn ladies haunting the last place they were seen. So, the Golden North Hotel in Skagway has their own story of lost love. This tale starts during the gold rushes of the 1890s.
Mm-hmm, okay.
A man, only referred to as Klondike Ike,
that's fantastic,
checked into the hotel with his wife, Mary. Ike left the hotel the next day to begin his search for gold, like many others had before him. And like many others, he never returned. Mary was heartbroken and locked herself in the room that they had reserved on the third floor. After a few days, the staff broke down the door and found her dead.
Mm.
Since then, guests report sightings of a ghostly apparition whom they've named Scary Mary.
I'm sorry, but that's kind of funny.
I know, it's funny. Well, it's like, why do you make it rhyme? Klondike Ike, Scary Mary, okay, yeah. Whatever. Anyway, Mary can be seen mostly on the third floor, or room 23, according to one source, searching forever for her lost husband. There are also instances of strange goings-on in room 14. They don't know if this is Mary messing around with the lights and causing sounds in the empty room, or if some other spirit has attached itself to the space. So I guess some people think that it's Mary, and maybe the rooms were confused, or she's just messing with people. some people think that it may have been a different spirit altogether.
Yeah.
One source I found said that Mary's wandering the hotel because she died due to illness while Ike was away prospecting, not that she was waiting for him to return.
Gotcha.
That she just happened sick. To pass away because she was sick and he was gone at the time. It's also said that the story of Mary and Ike was made up by the hotel owners in the 1960s.
I can definitely see that. Because
they thought a haunted hotel would entice visitors.
For sure.
But around here, we don't need that kind of negativity.
No, we don't need that negativity. It's logical.
That's not fun.
It's based on real events.
Yes. So, Scary Mary's real. And
Klondike Ike was real.
Yeah. And she was waiting for him to come back, and then she got sick and died. So, there. Combine the two of them. That's and right.
That
that's
makes
it.
Perfect sense.
So, moving on with ghostly ladies.
Yes.
Let's go get a drink.
Sounds fantastic.
The Red Onion Saloon.
Shut your mouth.
In Skagway.
Skagway, you
was built in 1898 at the height of the Klondike Gold Rush, when the population of Skagway skyrocketed from a few hundred to over 30,000 people.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, that's the kind. The Gold Rush thing was
insane.
Like, they wasn't playing. No, everybody kidding. Thought that they were going to go find gold.
Oh my gosh!
So the Red Onion Saloon was originally a brothel. And it was considered the most exclusive one in Alaska.
Oh, so bougie.
Which makes sense, because only about 8% of the population of Skagway was female at the time.
Okay, yeah.
Interesting fact, the planks of wood for the Red Onion were cut by none other than the founder of Skagway himself, Captain William Moore. How would you like to tell people, my brothel was built by Captain William Moore, the founder of the city. I mean,
that's real fancy.
Right? Like,
no wonder it was so exclusive.
So when the gold rush started and people started swarming the city, the owner decided the building should be moved closer to the rail depot to attract more clients. So having been built kind of willy-nilly, the building was lifted onto rolling logs and moved 4 blocks by a single horse and a crew of men. When they sat it down in its new location, however, they realized it was backwards. So instead of turning it around, they cut off the back and cut off the front and swapped them and then nailed them into place. They took off the front of the building and the back of the building, switched them out, and nailed them in. 1800s
ingenuity, friends.
And the cut lines can still be seen today.
That is amazing.
So, during the 2 prosperous years of Gold Rush fever, visitors could find a regular bar on the first floor. They could drink and talk with the ladies that were employed for entertainments.
Mm-hmm.
If they decided they wanted more privacy with the ladies, the second floor had 10 small rooms called cribs, which they could then spend time with the ladies in.
Kind of creepy sounding.
Yeah, I like to think of it not as cribs like baby cribs, but as in like, you know.
Welcome to my crib.
Yeah. Like, but I don't like calling them cribs. I keep calling them rooms after this.
Fantastic. I 100% support
so,
that.
So, the way that the sex workers could be hired was kind of crass. But it was also kind of clever. The bar had 10 dolls laid out to represent each woman. If the doll was lying flat on its back, it meant that the lady was already entertaining someone else. If the doll was upright, then the lady and the room were available. Kind of smart.
Kind of ingenious.
But also kind of like really on her back. That's kind of on the nose. But anyway. So,
oh, it's on her back.
Funny. That was good. The man got 15 minutes for $5 worth of gold. $5.
Wow.
And that you think about $5 was a lot of money then.
That was a lot.
Yeah. So once a selection was made, the man would go upstairs, and they called the stairway to heaven, to one of the rooms and meet the worker that he'd selected. He would pay her with the gold, and she would put it in a copper tube system that led to a safety deposit box.
That is smart.
So she dropped the money in, gold, and it would fall into a safety deposit box.
So they couldn't, like, steal it from the girls or whatever.
Yeah, or couldn't just decide not to pay or whatever.
Yeah.
So the business dealings were overseen by a madam and a crew of bouncers, and each room had more than one exit. So if a worker found herself in a dangerous situation, she had different ways to escape the
rooms. That's impressive, because you wouldn't think that would... Yeah, especially for then.
Yeah. So now on to the spooky stuff.
Okay, spooky.
A ghost named Lydia haunts the building.
Okay.
Lydia was likely a sex worker in the Gold Rush days. Besides footsteps being heard and felt, like the vibrations of the footsteps, people have reported unusually cold spots showing up in random places. And the scent of lilac perfume is in the air at times.
Oh.
And people have also felt their faces being caressed by Lydia. Some have actually seen her as a full body apparition, walking around in the madam's room or running down the hallway. And there is one particular room that she appears in on the second floor. Guests have taken photos in this room that show white orbs and even the faint outline of her face.
Whoa.
Yeah. Lydia also has a green thumb, apparently. She waters the plants, and the current hostesses have noticed, like, they'll check, and the soil in the pots is damp.
And they haven't come and in they and haven't watered been, them recently.
They haven't watered them.
Thanks, Lydia.
Yeah, so those who have seen her translucent figure noticed that Lydia's face was scarred, likely by syphilis.
Oh, no.
Many believe that Lydia suffered from the disease and hung herself in the room where she's often seen. Lydia, in general, is a friendly spirit, at least to the women.
Uh-oh.
There's another spirit in the building, though, that the employees have named John, who isn't quite so gracious. John's spirit is kind of a jerk, actually, and visitors are warned to be careful. If they smell a terrible body odor, John might be there and getting ready to push you down a flight of stairs.
Whoa.
Yeah, so the dude's a jerk.
That's intense.
And he smells bad. You know, no big deal. Okay. So this asshole has also been known to fling open doors when staff members are in a room changing clothes.
Ew. So he's a perv, too.
Yeah. John may have been a former bouncer during the saloon's heyday who was murdered by one of the sex workers. And the story is that one of them stabbed him to death due to his constant harassment.
Because he was a jacktail.
And I hope, just a little bit, that it was Lydia that got fed up with him and took him out.
That would be amazing.
Because I kind of think I love Lydia.
Yeah, I think Lydia's our favorite.
Yep. So Lydia took him out. She's like, there you go, ladies.
You're welcome.
He probably gave her syphilis. Anyway.
He probably did.
So at the end of the Klondike Gold Rush, the Red Onion was closed down, and it was only operated for about 2 years, because that's how long the Gold Rush was.
Not very long at all.
No. The prospectors followed the gold, and right. By then, they were dishing Skagway and heading for Nome, Alaska. Over the decades, Red Onion has been used for many businesses beyond a bar and a brothel. It's been a bakery, laundry, union hall, army barracks, gift shop, and a television studio. Today, the Red Onion Saloon is a restaurant and museum, and it's open from April to September. It's open from April to September because, as I mentioned before, kind of willy-nilly, the way that it was built, it doesn't have good insulation. So it's too cold for it to be open during the winter.
Oh my gosh.
But as usual with most good hauntings, all the spooky stuff seems to connect back to the building's early days as the best damn brothel in the state. Right. So there are a lot of other haunted places in Alaska. I found, oh my God, so many. Several hotels, all kinds of stuff. But I got one more story.
Okay. I can't wait.
I'm sure. I mean, I don't know who could top Lydia. Is that the wrong phrase to use? Who could top Lydia? But
that was classy.
I know. I am classy lady.
Yes, you are.
So Fairbanks Memorial Hospital.
Ooh, hospital.
Was funded and built by the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation.
Okay.
So in 1966, the Sisters of Providence, or Sisters of Charity, I saw it listed both ways, announced plans to shut down or sell the only hospital in the area, which was called St. Joseph's. There was a flood in Alaska and Fairbanks in August of 1967. And it caused substantial, irreversible damage to that hospital.
Oh, wow.
So even if they had thought, oh, we can sell it or whatever, it was beyond saving after the flood.
All right.
So that meant they would not have a hospital in town. So several concerned citizens traveled to North Dakota and met up with the LHHS, which is the Lutheran Hospital and Home Society.
Dang, that's a long way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Back
then. I'm literally looking at...
I mean, this was in the 60s, but still,
calendar.
Like... Yeah. The calendar. You mean the map?
The map.
It's okay. Fine.
It's a map, guys.
It's
not
warm
a
in the room where
it's
we're podcasting.
It's a map.
It is a map.
At least I knew what was on it.
Kind of tells you when the states are, I guess.
Anyway. What day of the week they are.
Yeah. So.
Oh my gosh.
The LHHS came to Fairbanks and helped lay out a plan, starting with the formation of the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation, which, good Lord, is a long name. Between land donated from the city of Fairbanks, community fundraising, and state and federal grants, the hospital was set up to be built. So, $8.5 million, and a few years later, Fairbanks Memorial Hospital opened its doors.
Whoa. That was in the 60s?
Yeah. Wow. March 1972, when it opened.
Okay.
The hospital was debt-free, having been funded completely through the fundraising efforts and grants.
Wow.
Yeah. $8.5 million. Because Fairbanks is one of the larger cities in Alaska.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing back then probably as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was either raise the money for it or fly to Anchorage.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, or drive on that long highway next to the igloo. Anyway, so over the decades, the hospital expanded. It added more patient rooms, a cancer treatment center, a daycare for hospital employees, an imaging center, a sleep lab, and a mental health unit.
Wow.
Of course, no matter how up-to-date or well-operated a hospital is, deaths are going to occur in one.
Mm-hmm.
And this is no exception. So this is where the spoopy stuff comes in.
Okay.
So there are stories of footsteps echoing through empty hallways, faucets turning on and off by themselves, equipment malfunctioning for no reason, and unexplained cold spots. The nursery at Fairbanks, though, is even more eerie.
Ew.
Sometimes they hear the cries of babies when there are no infants present.
Oh, heck no.
And it's believed that the babies have a little extra attention from an unpaid staff. Nurses, other workers, and visitors have seen angelic figures in the department.
What?
The apparitions seem to appear when an infant is close to death, and they believe that the angels are there to care for and accompany the babies into the afterlife.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that heartbreaking?
But also very nice.
Yes, yes. So, since this is the case, they think that the figures, angels or ghosts or whatever they are friendly. And perhaps maybe the babies whose cries can still be heard are sent back as angels when another child is close to death. That's my thought on it.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. I'm like, at least there were a lot of friendly ones. A lot of friendly spirits in this.
Yes.
I just realized most of these were like friendly ones.
Yeah.
Lydia.
Except for Jacktail.
Yeah, except for Jacktail and also those tombstone people and stealing tools and stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was just people just, you know, doing their thing in the afterlife. So, Alaska has so many interesting stories to tell, from its brutal winters and breathtaking views to the cultures and the clashes between the indigenous people, Russian and U.S. settlers, to the fight for wealth and the many gold and copper mines in the state. It's no wonder there are equally as many stories of haunted places, lingering ghosts, and eerie sights to behold.
Wow.
And that's Alaska hauntings. And oh my gosh, there are so many more.
That's just a little tidbit, huh?
I could probably do at least 3 episodes just hitting on them as quickly as I am. I look through like newspaper articles and stuff trying to find like specific tales of people who had passed away and stuff like that to try to tie them together. It's so hard to find stuff like that, though. But the stories, I tried to pick out the ones that had kind of interesting little things.
Yeah.
Like Lydia. So yeah, Lydia's my spirit animal.
She was awesome.
And then the babies and the angel babies. That was like one of the first ones I saw, and I was like, okay, the angel babies are going in this.
Oh.
Yeah. Angels coming to take care of the babies.
And that big igloo, that's so cool.
Yeah. I would love to see it. It's actually like, I know people are like, why do you want to build it? I'm like, that is a really cool idea, though.
I think that's fantastic. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine that nowadays?
Oh, I know.
Like Airbnb it?
Yeah. And it was supposed to have a spa and a gift shop and a restaurant. And I mean, he was going to deck that baby out, but money ran out, unfortunately.
Because
I'm kind of like, man, I wish somebody had turned it into a hotel. That would be a cool destination hotel. So, anyway, that's Alaska. We've got castles and hotels and igloos.
And a castle? That's yeah, so cool.
And a hospital with little babies and...
And a guy and his railroad. Daughter and a railroad.
And a brothel. So, it's all crazy stuff.
And a whole... building being moved on logs and then chopped and put back together.
I saw that and my mouth actually dropped open. I was like, are you kidding me
Frankenstein.
Right now? It's like they basically just built a box out of wood and then they were like, this needs to be turned around. Never mind. And they just cut off the front and the back and swapped them.
Just move the side pieces. It's yeah, fine.
It's fine. But the fact that you could still see the cut marks that's today, cool. It means that it's been, I mean, think about it though. Like, they built it like that, but it's still standing.
Yeah.
So you can still go to it. And they offer, like, they do, the hostesses and stuff there now dress in, like, the period clothes, like the Gold Rush period clothes and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And they'll give you, like, a little quick tour or whatever. But there was a ghost tour that you actually walk through the city. They tell stories and stuff, and it ends at the Red Onion Saloon.
That's cool.
And then you get, like, a more in-depth tour of the place.
That is cool. I think, as you know, I do like to watch ghost hunting.
Yeah.
Like, YouTubers that do that and stuff, and I'm pretty sure I've heard about the Red Onion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember a specific story, so it may have just been mentioned or something.
Maybe, yeah.
By some of the ones that I like to watch, but...
Yeah, it's neat.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And the name is just fantastic.
Yeah, Red Onion. I don't know.
It's so random.
Yeah, I don't know. I never found anything about why it was called that, but whatever. So, okay, well, I hope you guys enjoyed the bonus episode. We just wanted to give you a little bit something extra.
That was fantastic.
And since we just happened to line up on the whole Alaska thing with Diz's story from Wednesday, we were like, let's do it.
It was too perfect too not to.
Perfect. It was almost like Diz knew that Alaska was next.
It's almost like that.
And maybe it's because you were looking at your calendar.
I was just thinking that.
The calendar tells you what's next.
The calendar.
So.
Oh, my Lord.
So I'll just quickly reiterate. Facebook page is up. TW Podcast, hosted by Bev and Diz, is the name. Instagram is TriggerWarning411. And our email is TriggerWarning411@gmail.com.
Look us up. Say hi.
Say hi. And
tell us your own friends. Story if you have any.
Yeah.
Have you been to Alaska?
Oh, yeah.
Did you have a ghost story?
Tell
or
me
just an
if I mispronounced
story?
Things.
I'm sure you did a great job.
I don't know, but I tried. And it was fun to research.
It's pretty cool.
I've always wanted to go to Alaska. So
you should do a cruise. Everyone says it's amazing.
Yeah, I should. I'm scared of the water, but that sounds perfect. So,
and you probably have to fly there.
Yeah.
Maybe not right now.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
Thanks, so. Bev. That was fantastic.
Yeah, so, woo, there's a spooky sound effect. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again on Wednesday for our regularly scheduled episode.
Yes, and it will probably be a true crime episode.
Oh, boy, yes, because it'll be Diz's turn.
It'll be my turn.
All right, so we'll talk to you later.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Watch for deer.